College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We love the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and the family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
Hello and welcome. I am your host, JP John Paz from the Two Man Power Trip. Of course, joining me, the former WCW and ECW World Tag Team Champion, one of the greatest minds and bookers ever in the history of the business, the Games Master, the Taskmaster, the Devil himself, Mr. Kevin Sullivan. Kevin, how are you doing today, sir?
I'm doing great, JP. How are you?
Pretty good. Can't complain. It seems like every time we think that we have it figured out with the wrestling business, something's changing. Looks like The Rock is back in now with Roman at WrestleMania 40. So interesting.
Well, it didn't surprise me. I think I told you. They gave him $30 million.
Yep.
Emmanuel, right? Is that how you pronounce
yeah.
it?
Yeah, R. Emmanuel, yep.
Okay. He was an agent, right?
Yep.
Khan was an agent.
Yep.
Correct?
Yep.
For them, maybe not Khan because he's been engulfed into the wrestling business for a while now, but you think Emmanuel sees Cody, and this is no disrespect to Cody. I don't think Emmanuel was a wrestling fan as the art of wrestling. He's a businessman. Do you think he sees The Rock and Cody on equal footing?
No, no way. Rock okay. is the biggest movie star and worth the most money.
So they gave him $30 million, and then Punk got hurt. Brock is out.
Yep.
It's their first pay-per-view, correct?
Well, their first Mania, yeah.
Yeah, that's what I meant. Okay. They want to make a splash. I mean, and I understand the people wanting Cody to finish the story. So, what if, I'm skipping around here, but what if Cody wrestled Roman this time and didn't win? I mean, he finishes his story. Do you think a casual fan understands that he has to finish the story?
No. They probably don't even know what the story is, casual fan.
Right. But, I mean, I've heard some ridiculous numbers how much the front row seats cost for WrestleMania.
Oh, yeah.
Are they $10,000, JP?
Something like that, yeah. They're expensive. It's insane, because usually wrestling fans are not known for having money, but for Mania, they spend like crazy, and they fly from all over the world.
I always been booked on a signing or something that weekend. I meet more people from England and Belgium and Germany than I do really Americans. You know what I mean? They're spending a lot of money to come here. You know, it's not inexpensive. And when WrestleMania comes to your town, you can be sure the hotel prices are jacked up, food prices are jacked up, right? Everything, memorabilia, stuff, T-shirts, all these events they can go to. How many wrestling shows do you think there are discounting WWE in Philly that we'll say starting from Wednesday to Monday.
Oh, it's going to be crazy.
Yeah. So, I mean, they're spending money like crazy. They want to make a big splash. They want to make a big splash on their first one. Here's what people, I think, don't understand. They bought this company and merged it with UFC, and then the shit show happened, right?
Yep.
They're trying to do, people are thinking, oh, we got to finish the story, we got to finish the story. No, they got to get that shit behind them and get the spotlight in a positive direction. And with The Rock, everybody knows who The Rock is, correct?
Oh, yeah, big time.
So I'm not saying I don't think the story should be finished. What I'm saying is they're looking at this as a business decision rather than a wrestling decision. I mean, here's the thing they're going to have to fight. JP, don't you think more people are going to come forward now?
For sure. You would think so. To pile on and see what I can get out of it. Money, easier to come forward now. Yeah, for sure.
And then they're digging into everything. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
And I happened to be watching YouTube this morning, and I saw Jimmy Cornette said something that I never even thought of that shook me. What if they decide to clean house? I mean, Hunter has done amazing, the best job I've ever seen. But he's Vince's son-in-law.
Yep.
Could you see them putting The Rock as the head guy in WWE?
For sure. Yep.
Besides this horror, and the thing is, you know, the FBI's been waiting for this.
Oh, you know, yeah. Yep.
When he won the steroids scandals suit, and when he came out of, pulled off the neck brace, they spent a lot of money and didn't get anything. I mean, I look at this completely different. I don't have my wrestling fan hat on. I have a hat, not that I know a lot about inner workings of business, but I've been around the peripheral. They're doing this because everybody loves them until this happened, The Rock. I think they're doing this to get the stink off them. And if someone brought this up to Manuel and Khan, they said, well, he can finish the story in Saudi Arabia or SummerSlam or whatever. But I also think that this finish they're going to come up with is going to be an amazing finish. And I see Cody being an instrument in this finish to even raise his stature. I mean, what if some of the bloodline get involved and Cody comes down, they whip the asses Rock gets up from getting his ass kicked there, make a comeback together, blah, blah, blah. You know, it's like Cody is such a fan favorite now, and he's done an amazing job because he was getting booed in AEW, correct?
Yep.
Now he's the fan's darling. I think in the long run, he's going to make lemonade out of lemons because he's going to come across as the guy that's a company man. He hasn't bitched about it. He's endorsed The Rock. So if he gets involved in the finish and saves The Rock, what a rub he's going to get.
We want Cody. It's a big movement right now. But without The Rock, you're not getting that Super Bowl rub. They're on Media Week for Super Bowl. It never happened before. You're not getting that without The Rock. So you need The Rock in this equation. There's no doubt about it.
Right. And I'll be interested in seeing this finish.
Yeah, me too, because the rumor is maybe The Rock might win, which would be insane. I feel like Roman should definitely go over, and Cody should be the guy to finally beat Roman, but not necessarily WrestleMania. That can happen down the road at SummerSlam or something like that, but he could finish the story at another date and time.
Right. I don't see, and I may be completely out of my mind, I don't see The Rock winning the title.
Yeah, I don't think so either. I wouldn't think so anyway.
I wouldn't think so either. But we don't know the whole parameters of him sitting on the board, what that entailed. You got to trust the guy pretty explicitly to give him $30 million and put him on the board and give him his name. So they got their work cut out for them on this finish.
I totally agree. We'll see. Obviously, very, very interesting stuff headed forward for WrestleMania. We'll see what's going on with it. But as far as today and today's topic at hand, speaking of WrestleMania, to me, the real Mr. WrestleMania, the guy who had the undefeated streak, you know, the absolute legend, The Undertaker. So when is the first time you ever laid eyes on The Undertaker or even met The Undertaker, Mark Calloway?
When he came to WCW, is me, Mark. I mean, he was, you know, everybody says, oh, I knew he was going to be big. I thought he was going to be big because he was an athlete at that size. Could walk the ropes, right? And he loved the business, loves the business. I think he's the biggest drawer of money in the history of the wrestling business because he drew it for such a long time. He didn't ever have, I don't think, a down period to draw money. I mean, he worked with everybody. And he didn't mind putting guys over when it was time to do it, right?
Right.
So my hats are off to him, man. People talk about, you know, the Mount Rushmore. His face should be the first one on it.
When you say that, and, you know, him being a big draw, do you put any credence to the fact that he was never like the number one guy? He was never the top guy. He was always kind of the 1A or the 1B. He was never Hogan or Austin, but he worked with those guys.
Right. Well, here's the thing. if you go back to old thinking, right? They never gave a belt to a guy that had some sort of gimmick, like Argentina Rocker, right? He came in, who was drew nothing but money. Andre, until the Hogan. Dusty got the belt a couple of times, but they were short, and it was because Eddie wanted it. I think during the time they were really hot, and like you saying, The Rock and Austin and Hogan, I don't think he was 1B. I think he was 1+A. They knew how much money he was going to draw. And I guarantee you that if he wasn't on those cards, yeah, they would have done big business, but not the way they did it and not the way they knew when his match came on, especially in WrestleMania. I don't think that's that'd be the wrong thing to say. I don't think that him going out and wrestling, the people were always satisfied because he gave so much of himself. You know what I'm saying?
Yep.
If you stopped a casual fan and said, what did you think of the show? Oh, the main event was great, but that Undertaker boy, he's a fabulous athlete. I mean, I think he doesn't get the credit he deserves.
When you look at him and the way his style and his career, a lot of people think he was trained by Don Jardine, the spoiler, but he just kind of emulated him. He was just kind of like a big fan of his, was never trained by him. And obviously they did cross paths in world-class championship wrestling in his early days. But very interesting, right, to think of, like, the spoilers kind of a guy that, you know, walking the ropes and different things like that and being that big was basically, you know, an idol of his.
Yeah. I mean, he took what the spoiler did in regional territories and put it all over the world. When the next guy comes along and does it, they're not going to say, oh, he reminds me of the spoiler, are they?
No, it reminds me of the Undertaker, yeah.
Yeah.
So interesting, though. So he had a basketball career, you know, obviously 6'10". He's a huge guy. Thinking maybe he could do something in the basketball world, but decides pro wrestling instead. Ends up trying to get trained by Buzz Sawyer, somebody that you know very well. And obviously he didn't think Sawyer was very committed to giving him his training, but he was very committed in taking his money. What do you know as far as that story of basically Buzz Sawyer taking his money and skedaddling?
He did it to a bunch of people. Did it to Magnum. I think he hit Magnum's family up for 10 grand. You know,
and
that
Magnum
was.
Ended up meeting him down the road in Portland.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was Buzz's MO. You know what I mean? He would have fit great in this tragedy that's going on in wrestling today because he would have been in the middle of this thing too.
Were you friendly with him at all or no?
Yeah, I don't think a lot of people were friendly with him. They were, because he was such a wild man. But I got along with him.
Man, he takes this giant's money. Obviously, he's pretty tough, so he doesn't really care, thinking he could probably take him anyway. But he basically takes his money, $3,000, and then never really trains him and kind of just leaves. And he did that to a bunch of the guys. It's crazy to think, like, of all the guys you do that to, this guy ends up being one of the biggest stars ever in the history of the business. And now everybody remembers Buzz Sawyer as being the guy that tried to steal money from Undertaker. Crazy.
Yeah. From what I gather, the only thing he taught him was a lockup, right?
It was, he was saying very limited, just exactly what you would do on like kind of first day stuff. And then that's it.
Yeah.
So with Buzz Sawyer, obviously, you know, you got to go elsewhere. He goes down to World Class Championship Wrestling, starts learning his way through. There's a match, and actually it's on an Undertaker DVD out there for WWE, but it's available also on YouTube somewhere if you can find it. A match, him as Texas Red against Bruiser Brody. Man, Brody just kicks his ass, just stiffs the crap out of him. Par for the course, or was this something else, you know, here happening with these two?
Brody, I work with Brody a lot, but I was no threat to Brody. I wasn't 6'10".
Right.
You know, 300 pounds. Brody saw the monster inside the egg. He knew this guy was going to be good just on size alone and his athletic ability. He was probably trying to, I don't know if you could intimidate Mark, but he wanted to get that win and get it his way. Do you know what I'm saying?
Yep.
He wanted them to know that he was the man. That's how Frank did business.
I was going to say, and Taker's a young guy, too. He's not going to do anything back to him.
Right, right. And Frank, that's how he did business. I mean, he was stiff and, you know, he was around Curtis and Mark and guys that had been through the wars of the dressing room from the 50s on. And he was real good friends with them. So they probably indoctrinated him with a lot of stories about you got to do it for yourself. You got to do it for yourself. You got to do it for yourself. And it worked for him till the unfortunate incident.
When you look at Taker, obviously he leaves World Class, goes to CWA in Memphis with Jerry Jarrett, meets up with Dutch there, and you know, gets some advice and some great, I guess, very knowledgeable advice from Dutch and Jarrett there in Memphis before eventually making his way to WCW as Mean Mark Callis. When he gets there, the story is that Terry Funk came up with that name. What did you think when you first saw him, though? Because a lot of guys like Heyman, Teddy Long, everyone was saying, oh, money, money, money. Terry Funk liked him. All these guys liked him. Did you like him?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he's an athlete, you know, and he really loved the business. Did I ever think he was going to be the phenomenon he was? No. Did I think he was going to get over and draw money? Yes. But he made, and that's a pretty whale gimmick if you really look at it. That's hard. That's usually not a long shelf life. But he made it work because he never cracked the gimmick. He never stepped outside of it. From what I hear, when he traveled, he was always in black, you know what I mean? He didn't stop and talk to people. Yeah, I mean, it's amazing what he's done.
Love that. And of course, he became a skyscraper while there, managed by Heyman at one point, obviously, kind of going under his tutelage a little bit. Did have a match with Sting. I know a lot of people say, oh, Sting Undertaker never happened. Well, Sting Mean Mark did happen. Sting, of course, got the win. He beat Lex Luger beat Mean Mark there. So he was kind of the upper mid-card, more mid-card guy in WCW, never could kind of break the glass ceiling for one reason or another. But when you look at that, do you think you guys could have done more with him just because look at the potential that was there, or was he too green at that point?
Well, he you hit it on the head. Here's what was going on back in that era. Like, we talk about how things don't fit unless you realize what the error was, right?
Yep.
They had so much riding, meaning the company, they were afraid to take a chance on a young guy all the way. You know what I mean?
Yep.
So I understand why they did it that way, because it was a different time and a different era, and they were trying to get off the ground. And even if they saw his potential, they were afraid to take a chance.
So basically, it seemed like something is there. Like, this guy has something. Heyman sees it. A lot of different people see it. Like, and obviously you see it. Terry Funk sees it. But one guy that didn't see it, that was one of the big bookers at the time, was Ole Anderson. And Undertaker tells a story, which is great when he kind of tells it, but I'll kind of paraphrase. Basically, Ole brought him into the office, said they're releasing him, saying, "You'll never draw money in this business. Go do something else." Ole might have been a little off on that one.
Ole ruled in intimidation. Ole, you know, Blackjack Mulligan knocked him out 3 times. You know that, right?
Yep.
Well, after the first time, I think you'd be really cautious what you said in front of Jack Mulligan, right?
Yep.
Ole was a stubborn guy. And you got to remember, again, different time, different era. He came from Vern when they were training guys like they were trying to kill them.
Yep.
So Ole, and unless you work like Ole, he didn't think anybody could draw money. And if you look at who his friends were, Stan Hansen, who I think is a great, great performer, and made a shitload of money. Ole liked him because he was stiff like Ole. Back in the day when Ole broke in the late 60s, that kayfabe was still super strong. And he was coming out of guys that were wrestling in Minneapolis, Billy Robinson, Crusher, Mad Dog Vachon, Paul Vachon, Chris Taylor. The list goes on and on and on. Guys with either huge amateur background or had gone to Vern's camp and got pounded into the ground. So it was a different time and a different era. So that's where Ole's schooling was from. So if you didn't, it didn't matter to Ole who you were, unless you worked like him, I don't see anything in him. Do you know what I mean?
Yep, yep. Man, was he was dead wrong on that one. There's kind of no doubt about it. It's interesting, yeah, though. His last match is September 1st, 1990, loses to Sting in Greensboro, North Carolina. It's funny, Sting's last match will be in Greensboro in March for AEW. He goes to USWA for a brief stint, beats Bill Dundee, loses to Jerry Lawler, then gets signed by the WWF, the World Wrestling Federation, debuts as Kane the Undertaker before eventually just becoming Undertaker, and makes his real debut, of course, Survivor Series 1990, a part of the Million Dollar Team. And it's almost like, wow, and then he's just off to the races. But it's almost like, man, he makes that debut. It's so impactful. He's this 1980s Undertaker from the old West. Who the hell knows it's going to work? And it turned it out. It was one of the greatest gimmicks, if not the greatest gimmick of all time.
I think it's the greatest gimmick of all time.
Really?
Because the last... Well, sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say over like Million Dollar Man or even
Oh, yeah. Ted's not even in, we're in the ballpark there. Austin was a different phenomenon.
Right.
But I mean, a gimmick. The greatest gimmick of all times, because how many years did he, as The Undertaker, 26?
In WWE, was it 30? 30 years.
30 years.
Yep.
And he never lost momentum because he busted his ass in the ring. I mean, and he could do shit that most guys his size would stumble over. Jumping, doing the dives before they were popular, right?
Yep.
Walking the ropes, the clothesline off the top. I mean, phenomenon.
And it's crazy. You see guys, I would say 150 pounds less than him, doing that same stuff and not as graceful or as good. So shows you how athletic he was for being 6'9", 6'10".
Right, right.
Crazy that he would even try some of that stuff. You know what I mean? Back in those days, those big men are just going to, they're not going to go on the rope. They're not going to do that. I mean, he changed the game for sure for a lot of the bigger wrestlers.
Absolutely. They were just lumbering around the ring until he came around, you know, pounds you in the corner. The guy goes down, the heel walks away and aggravates the crowd, comes back and pounds him, slams a guy. Not Undertaker. He was zipping through the matches and doing things little guys couldn't even do, like you said.
When you look at Taker, too, it's like, okay, he's big, you know, but he has something. He has some sort of charisma. And it's funny, Vince McMahon can just take somebody, and he had always had a history of this. I know Hogan was over in Japan in AWA, but he takes this guy. He's like, I see something in him to be the biggest star ever, and then he makes them the biggest star ever. You know what I mean? He helps make them the biggest star. Same with Undertaker. He saw something there. He was big on Taker, and then it's like, boom, within a year, he's going to win the WWF title from the from Hulk Hogan, the big star of the day, too. So he saw something in Undertaker and really was kind of like the catalyst, even creating the character, but really giving him that big push.
I think, you know, we now think about the horrible booking stuff that Vince did, right? I'm not talking about scandal. I'm just talking about the gimmicks. You know, everybody had a job, a plumber, a repo man, you know, everybody. And he, and then he became the hottest heel in the business because he got back to the sensibility of, hey, I'm going to make this look much realer than what I've been doing. And he had great, I mean, he was the one that split Marty and Sean up, right?
Yep.
Sean wasn't a big guy for that era, but he saw something in him. So, I mean, it's pretty amazing that when Vince was on, and the other thing about it was, I don't know if Vince, at the period of the bad booking, was isolated from people saying, well, here's the cons rather than the pros. You know what I mean?
Yep.
I think everybody was afraid to even say, oh, I don't think a guy that's half bull, half man is going to work.
Right, right. They're just saying, it's, yeah.
Yeah. Oh, that's a good one, Vince. I see where you're coming from.
For sure. So, Yeah. It's crazy, though. Undertaker has some sort of resentment for Hogan, even though Hogan got him in Suburban Commando. Hogan helped him out. Hogan literally got put him on the map. You beat Hogan at that period. I know technically Ric Flair helped and he cheated, but still, he pinned Hulk Hogan during Hogan's hot streak, which rarely happened. And Hogan really put him over. Undertaker had a problem because Hogan was saying, "Oh, he injured my neck with the Tombstone, and he was holding me, squeezing me too tight, and he dropped me." And typical Hogan kind of work and stuff. Vince was a part of it too, so Vince was going along with it. I think they were just kind of testing Undertaker to see what he would say. You know, Hogan typical. You know better than anybody, Hogan's typical working the guy stuff. So I don't know. I just have a feeling that Undertaker kind of harbors some resentment for Hulk, even though Hulk got him over.
Oh, I've heard things on YouTube, interviews, where he says he can't stand Hulk because of that. You know, his first shot at the big time, and Hogan kept on saying, my neck, you know, when they pass each other. And if you look at the finish, his head was nowhere near that chair. And then to put the heat on a young kid like that, it was almost like he was trying to wipe out the win. Put the spotlight back on him.
Right. To me, too, I feel like he was messing with him, like to see how he would react, to see what he would say, because Vince did the same thing, and he never complained about Vince doing it. Vince and Hulk were doing it together, so like he could have said something about Vince and busting Vince's balls, too. And I think Shane McMahon even was like kind of making a joke about it about behind the scenes. So weird that, you know, he didn't like Hulk doing that. Thinks Hulk, I guess, could have went about it differently. And of course, Hulk at this Tuesday in Texas wins back the title. Then Jack Tunney says nobody's a champion. Of course, Royal Rumble 1992 comes about, and it's for the vacant WWF title, which Ric Flair wins. So he wasn't champion for very long. Maybe that's a part of Undertaker's problem with him as well.
I don't think so. I think it's that he just didn't like him saying that he hurt him. Because one of the things I do know about him is that he takes great pride knowing that he's one of the safest guys ever in the ring. And here you are, a young guy, get the shot at the wrestling god, and you hurt him?
Right. Didn't hurt, though, in Vince's eyes, because then really Vince kind of kept Taker's momentum going. No, not towards the title, but beats Jake the Snake Roberts at WrestleMania, and really the year before beating Snook at Mania, and the streak starts. So maybe it's not on purpose, but he is getting a bit of a push, and they're really, you know, making him a big babyface. And, you know, he's going to feud with Kamala, and then eventually Giant Gonzalez, but he's going to become like that big babyface 1A, like we were saying before, like that top guy, like Andre guy, where maybe he's not going for the title again just yet, but he is becoming a top draw for the company and kind of just dispensing of all these monsters.
Yes, that's what I said. I think that nobody has drawn as much money as he has because of the length. 30 years he drew money. 30 years. And there was no, correct me if I'm wrong, there was no significant time off from the ring.
Just injuries.
Yeah, but he came right back. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
He didn't lollygag and stretch it out. He's a wrestling fan. He loves wrestling. So I can see where when Hogan said that, sent a crack right through his psyche. My God, I just wrestled Hulk Hogan, and he said I hurt him. What's going to be the repercussions?
Yep. Yeah, not good. But after that, though, obviously Hogan would be gone, you know, by the time Undertaker really, really started gaining some big momentum as a babyface. Like I said, Giant Gonzalez, the fake Undertaker, they did that whole storyline. King Kong Bundy, DiBiase, IRS. There's a bunch of different feuds that he has along the way. Dispatches of Diesel in one of Diesel's final matches before he heads off to WCW. Really, though, do you like Undertaker more as a babyface or as a heel? Because during the Attitude Era, when he starts becoming that the demon heel, obviously he debuted as a heel, but when he becomes like that demon devil heel with the devil worshiping stuff, do you think that's him at his best? Because I love that gimmick.
I do too, but I look at the crowd, they're still cheering him because they appreciate his hard work. I'm not saying the whole building cheered him, but people that really followed it were cheering him because he did his gimmick so well.
I mean, he's still the dead man, but he's doing like the Lord of Darkness thing, then the Ministry of Darkness, then he's crucifying people. It was very, like, it was a different take on the same character. Like, he's always been great at adapting and changing his character.
Yeah, and you hit it on the head. Changing his character, but keeping the base of the character alive, no matter what he did. Do you know what I mean?
Yep.
Like the sit up, you know, the eye rolling.
Yes.
Yeah.
Very Michael Myers-esque. I'm sure he got some of it from that, but definitely some of that stuff all added to the character. Never really cut many promos until he really became American Badass and then doing the Booger Red and the Big Evil gimmick. That's when he really started to realize, like, wow, he actually is a really good promo and can talk and cut great promos.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I mean, this guy was a student of the wrestling business. You know, going out there and cutting interviews when you're young is very difficult. So maybe him not doing it for a while, and obviously he's a perfectionist, so maybe him not doing it at the beginning until he felt really comfortable, because his promos became a work of art to me.
Did you like American Badass and the Booger Red and the Big Evil when he started doing that? Or do you prefer him as the dead man?
The dead man. And I think there's more to that story than we know. I have no knowledge. This is just me off the top of my head. That was when they lost a lot of guys to WCW. Maybe at that, and I'd have no idea. Maybe there was a little problem in paradise with him and Vince at that period because he couldn't take The Undertaker to WCW, but he sure could take the biker with a different name.
Right. And even to this day, I know when he does his own podcast, it's 6 Feet Under with Mark Calloway. It's not 6 Feet Under with The Undertaker. So obviously he doesn't own The Undertaker name. Vince does.
You're right.
So interesting, like the different incarnations, because always thought he was a good worker, good wrestler, sometimes wasn't able to showcase it unless he was in the ring with Bret Hart, who had awesome match, or Shawn Michaels. But then he'd have crazy brawls with Mankind and have, you know, great matches that way. But really, when he starts doing an MMA gimmick in the mid-2000s against Kurt Angle and Shawn Michaels again and different wrestlers, you start to see, like, wow, he's a damn good wrestler with a good repertoire. He's doing the submissions. He's got a good punch. Like, once he started, and then obviously later on feuding with Lesnar, but once he started kind of breaking it down and really showcasing his skills in the 2000s, you're like, damn, he actually is a really, really good worker.
Oh, he's excellent. Excellent. I mean, I think the only bad match I ever heard of was the Saudi in Arabia with my boy Bill Goldberg, right?
Yep.
And Goldberg concussed himself before he got to the ring.
And the thing is, too, with him, it's like, okay, maybe the match had ended the streak with Lesnar, but Undertaker got concussed during that match, so he was a little off there. Do you ever think they should have ended the streak?
You know, everything has an ending. I was thought if you were going to have somebody beat him was Brock, right? But imagine if they did a Rocky thing where it showed him training. Like you said, you didn't know he was such a good worker. Showed him training, and they built it up for a year, and he got the win back from Brock.
Yep. And really, what happens is, you know, he would eventually, he'll be Bray Wyatt and a couple of different guys, and they go in a different direction with him until really winds up his career during COVID, and his last match was the graveyard match against AJ Styles. Of course, he gets the win, and that's his retirement. But his retirement was during COVID, and he even said he's glad it was during COVID, because if it was in front of the fans, he would have wanted to come back because he would have got that adrenaline pumping again.
Right, right, right. I mean, I'm sure he's going to be at WrestleMania, right?
Oh, yeah. What do you? I would think.
I don't think wild horses can hold him back. But where I'm going with this, he's going to be looking around and he's going to feel like a fish out of water because he's been such a major part of the history of WrestleMania. You know, yeah.
What do you think? Obviously, he's a Hall of Famer. He still does one-man show today, and he's one of the greatest. But what's the legacy? What do you think is his legacy on wrestling?
Top five in the history of the business. And he worked hard every night. He gave the people their money's worth and more.
One of the all-time greats, like you said, one of the greatest draws of all time, and you put him on your Mount Rushmore.
Yeah. I think he's maybe the first guy I put on.
And I feel like we could even do more and more episodes on The Undertaker later and just like break down different parts of his career, because he's got 30 years in WWE, and at the top of a level in WWE for those 30 years, it's just insane, and the guys he feuded with. But let's head towards the plugs. Follow me on Twitter and Instagram. A two-man power trip. You can follow me on Twitter and Instagram at two-man power trip. Kevin, what do you got going on in this crazy world? Anything?
Yeah, I'm going to go to Florida on Friday, and there's championship wrestling from Florida. They're filming on Saturday, and it's in Pompano, the arena there. So come out and say hello to me. And then the following weekend, I'm in Rhode Island, so I've been having a pretty busy end of January and February.
Nice. Awesome. Thank you, everybody out there, for listening. We'll see you right back here next time. Have a good one, folks. This has been a John Paz Power Trip production in conjunction with the Two Man Power Trip of Wrestling. You could follow us on Instagram and Twitter at Two Man Power Trip. You could check us out on Facebook. You could subscribe on YouTube. You can go to patreon.com/TMPTEmpire to become a patron. And also check out the website TMPTEmpire.com and buy a shirt at ProWrestlingTees.com. Two Man Power Trip. where the power lies, brother. College football fans, are you ready for week one? DraftKings Sportsbook is hooking you up with a can't-miss offer to start the season strong. This week, new customers can bet just $5 on college football and score $200 in bonus bets instantly. Anything can happen in college football. That's right. Your team could go from unranked to dynasty mode in just a couple of years. Change comes fast. The only thing that's a lock is great offers from the DraftKings Sportsbook. Life's more fun when you're in on the action. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app now and use the code TASKMASTER, all lowercase. New customers can score $200 in bonus bets instantly when they bet just $5 on college football. Only DraftKings Sportsbook is the way to go, and use that promo code TASKMASTER, then the crown is yours. That's right. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app today and use that promo code TASKMASTER. Own it, live it, win the crown.
We loved the 1980s wrestling era, when kayfabe was king and wrestling did whatever it took to protect the business. When all the territories dealt with the rise of the WWF and the NWA emerged as its greatest challenger. Imagine if there were an epic drama series based on that era, combining the corporate warfare and the family drama of Succession with the giant cast and epic storytelling of Game of Thrones. That day has come. Kings of the Ring is the first audio drama podcast based on wrestling.
Go back to your trailer, you hillbilly.
It's a fiction series about the 1980s wrestling wars and the sex, drugs, and muscles lifestyle of the 80s wrestler and the sacrifices they make for success. With guest voice acting appearances by Lanny Poffo.
I even have a good dropkick.
And AEW's RJ City.
I didn't really have that much to do.
Search Kings of the Ring from any podcast app or kingsotr.com and binge away.
Ladies and gentlemen, the following contest is for the United States Heavyweight Championship. It is set for one fall with a 20-minute time limit. Introducing first the challenger, he is accompanied by his manager, Paul E. Dangerously, from Houston, Texas, weighing 319 pounds, Mean Mark.
These guys are both in the super heavyweight category, and with very little, if any, body fat on these two guys, any excess, I should say. Mean Mark going for that hard punch, went a little high with it, got Luger that time, though, from behind with that gloved right hand, caught him in the, looked like the side of the head, big foot right to the face, and the total package now, after about two or three high-impact moves, it's Mean Mark.
It tells you something about a guy when he's big enough to get a foot straight out into the face of a man 6'5" tall.
Flat of his stomach. He's close to the ropes. I wonder if he would use the ropes to break the maneuver.
He might be able to reach up and grab that rope. I don't know. Pride may keep him from doing that.
I think you're right. Mean Mark's right hand has been very effective thus far in this contest. Luger has suffered from that. And now Mean Mark climbing to the top rope.
Look at this, Jim.
Walking right down it and nails again with a gloved right hand. Explodes with those clotheslines on Mean Mark. And the tide has definitely turned.
Mark flat on his back out in the ring. But Luger, as you say, has turned the tide. He's got to get him in a clutch.
Can he get him in a rack? Can he get him up? He's got him up. All 319. My sets the referee up. He'd love a cheap victory here.
Both wrestlers are down, and so is the referee.
The unbelievable part of this is that Luger had Mean Mark all 319 of him